You've heard me talk about my dog Tucker a lot on this podcast, and it's hard to imagine our family now without the joy that this little field spaniel has brought to our daily lives. That's when we were approached about advertising Superfood Complete on the show, and I said, well, yes, of course. Actress Katherine Heigl has helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, and she is seeing more and more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Dogs across America, just like my dog Tucker, are trying Superfood Complete and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe and order right now to get up to 50% off your regularly priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com. That's BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe today.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Today on the Zabecast, it is a late night, fresh off the Roadcaster Pro Edition with late night Andy, about to drink his milk and eat his cookies and go to bed. Yes, Virginia, there is a God. Redemption comes 1 year later from supreme embarrassment to championship bliss. We'll talk title game, Final Four, the NCAA, bad contracts, Ernie's ouster, and a whole lot more. Your bonus 1% Zabe is locked and loaded, so buckle up and let's go.
Here we go.
A late night edition of the Zabecast, where it has just gone final in Minneapolis. Wahoo wah. The University of Virginia, national champs, 85-77 in overtime against a gritty, gutty, and game Texas Tech squad that may have been jobbed with one of the worst applications of instant replay you have ever seen. At this point, I am sitting here like Kermit the Frog, sipping a cup of tea. I have nothing else to say about this, nothing else to add. You saw exactly the devil's child, the spawn of sports Satan, birthed in overtime on that replay. Yes, Moretti's pinky touched the ball. That was never, ever intended to be why you would use replay to overturn a call. But once you start microscoping things, my God, you never know what you're going to find. It may not have decided the game. There was quite a bit of game left after that call, but it certainly was pivotal, and it will leave a bad, bad taste in many fans' mouth. So, like we talked about yesterday, me and Mr. X, when a horseshoe is lodged firmly up the ass of a team on a run in a tournament or in a playoff situation, anecdotally speaking, we've got no proof about this. The horseshoe tends to stay put. The luck continues all the way to the fucking end. And it sure enough did right there. Because first it was the shot from Diakite, then it was the foul, and tonight it was the pinky. So, without further ado, you're not going to believe this, people. Guess who is still awake at this ungodly hour of nearly midnight on Hello. The East Coast? Andrew Pollin is live, awake at midnight.
Oh man, this never fails to disappoint, does it?
Unbelievable that, first of all, congratulations on being awake. You would normally stay up for this though, right? Back when we were doing our show, yeah.
Oh yeah, there's a few, you know, local teams in championship games. This game, not too many others, but I love this event, and this was great. I mean, the way it started out, you go, oh my god, this, we're gonna watch all night, and then it got going.
The under 16 mark, it was 3-2 Texas Tech. So you do the math on what that would have looked like, but it did pick up, and it turned out to be a very entertaining game, which of course is going to be remembered by the pinky from hell.
Yep. That's true. And also, I think what you saw was a play at the end of regulation that could have easily gone, you know, the way it went for Virginia against Auburn.
You could have called a foul on that.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't have been the right call, but you could see that happening there, and it didn't happen.
Yeah, what if the referees had choked in that moment and blew their whistle?
Yeah. And I think that call was ridiculous, too, on the out-of-bounds. I think Virginia still would have won without that, but the out-of-bounds call there was ridiculous. That was absolutely ridiculous.
Well, you know, also, too, it's funny. You get to microscoping things, and once you start doing that, you never know what you're going to find exactly. And the application of the rules by way of microscope is so uneven because some things you can change and others you can't. I mean, Moretti was arguably fouled on that play.
Oh, yeah.
And all they could look at was, did it touch his pinky? That was never intended. Basketball has always been played under the principle of who knocked it out, basically. Right. Not whose pinky touched it last.
Yeah, and I mean, you could never see that in real time on the floor. The only way you could see that is on the film, and that really wasn't the intent of instant replay. That's to overturn egregious calls. That would not have been an egregious call had that ball been called out of bounds on Virginia.
That said, I think, Andy, you are still in favor of replay.
Because I think you need to have it, but you need to apply it differently.
Okay.
I mean, in that particular case, it should not have been applied.
So I would put you in the category of replay reformer, not replay abolitionist, because I am an abolitionist. I would take every goddamn replay machine and push it off a bridge into the deepest gorge and the fastest moving river and say, never again. I lived my whole life without this shit. I don't need it now.
Yeah, well, I think at some point it would prevent a team that should have advanced. Now, you could also say Virginia shouldn't be there anyway because of the Ty Jerome call. So,
I just mentioned this before I, you know, dialed you on the phone. When the horseshoe is jammed up a team's ass, it stays there. Am I right?
Right.
All your years of watching sports, doesn't it always seem that way when a team has that good juju, that luck, it doesn't run out until there's confetti falling from the rafters?
Yeah, I mean, but they're also, I think, one of the greatest stories in the history of sports of coming back from just an unbelievable occurrence. You know, to have lost the way they did the year before. They didn't, like, get beat at the buzzer by a lower seed. They lost by 20 points to a 16, to a team where not a single player they would have recruited, not a single player from UMBC was probably on the radar for Virginia, and then to come all the way back and win it all. I mean, I think it's one of the most remarkable stories in sports.
It is a hell of a story, and it is nice that good guys can finish first, because obviously a guy like Tony Bennett, not just handsome as all get out, just a nice guy, you know? And it appears that Virginia is doing it without paying the mothers of their players consulting fees. If you know what I'm saying.
It appears that way.
It appears that way. But we don't know for sure exactly.
No.
So, all right, there's a lot to unpack from this game and from the Final Four. Where do you want to start on the Final Four? And I haven't talked to you since the first two games on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that what you saw is maybe, and somebody wrote this and is taking a little flack, I think, from the NBA, too, that this is the future of college basketball, that, you know, what happened with Duke, that's going to be gone in another year or two. They're going to get rid of the one and dones. And so what you got here, this guy, Matt Mooney, it's his third school. You know, transfers,
right?
Virginia's got guys who are redshirted.
Well, Pete Thamel, writing for Yahoo, said that this was basically the future, which was low scoring, starless Final Fours, and that college basketball needs a quote plan in order to figure out how to better, you know, address financial concerns for players so as to not, and this was his words, lose your best talent to the NBA and the G League. And I nearly laughed milk out my nose thinking, what are you fucking talking about? No kid who can go to the NBA is going to be swayed by even $100,000 a year to go to college for 1 year. The NBA guys are going straight to the NBA, and 99% of the kids are going to college.
No, but I think what they have to do is something that Gary Williams has been talking about for a while. If a kid declares for the NBA draft and he isn't taken, he should be able to go back to college. And I also think that if a guy goes in the second round, he should be able to go back to college. I think that might be a good compromise because, you know.
Okay, so hold on, though. That gets complicated. Does a coach then rescind his scholarship once he declares for the pros?
No.
You got to hold that scholarship until after the draft.
Oh, come on. How many schools are that, you know?
I don't know. I don't know, down? Andy. I think these coaches don't like holding on to empty scholarships for any longer than they have to. Also, what if the coach says, well, we're moving on anyway, and then does the kid have to sit out after coming back from the NBA draft if his current team doesn't want him back?
Well, the way these transfer rules work now, they can get some type of degree and move on. Yeah. I mean, you know.
These graduate transfers, Mooney is one. Mooney said, well, I can't get my graduate degree in just 1 year. Right. So these kids are figuring out, if I don't play early and I've still got 4 years left and I bust my hump and I get a degree, undergrad degree in two and a half years, whatever, then I can take two more years somewhere else and still be eligible to play.
Yeah. I mean, it's happening. They're supposedly talking about cracking down on it. They're not going to do that. I think this is a good system. This is working. Guy can go to a school for 1 year. Look, when 1989, so we're talking 30 years ago, when Seton Hall went to the championship game and lost in overtime to Michigan, they had a guy named Andrew Gaze, who was a professional basketball player in Australia.
I remember him.
He showed up on campus in October. He played on the team. He dropped out of school the day after the championship game and went back to Australia to play professional basketball. That model works. It's okay. That doesn't bother me, because this nonsense about student athletes, and I got into it on Twitter with Feinstein over the weekend, but the reality is they're not student athletes. They don't go there to be students. They go there to be basketball players. So treat it as such.
As who was the quarterback for Ohio State said famously on Twitter, we ain't here to play school.
Oh, yeah, that was
Jones.
Is he still in the league? He was with Buffalo for a while. Cardale Jones.
We ain't here to play school. That is one of the best lines ever. But basketball and football are different animals. And
true,
as far as basketball goes, you know, I ran the numbers on this. There's so many college. There's 351 D1 programs. 351, Andy. Mm-hmm. 13 scholarships per. And if you count the entire first and second round of the NBA draft, that's 1.1%. of the entire population that even get drafted. So why are we worrying about the 1.1%? Let them go pro. Because why?
Because these are the ones that move the needle on the tournament. I mean, this was a year where Zion Williamson was the biggest thing in college basketball.
And, okay. But guess what? There'll be another one next year.
Not as big, but occasionally they come along.
But from 95 when Garnett jumped to the pros, and he was the guy that started it all, right?
Well, there have been a couple of guys like 20 years earlier, but he's the one that started the big movement, yeah.
Garnett starts at 95. For 10 years, we had guys jump into the pros from 95 to 05 when they finally put in the one and done. And guess what? The tournament survived.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
there's new guys that come along. I had forgotten about last year. Do you remember the stylings? And, you know, by the way, a lot of these kids are like, well, I want to be able to, a lot of people are saying these kids should be able to benefit off their name and likeness. Most guys don't have any value in their name nor their likeness because nobody knows what they look like. For example, Cam Reddish and RJ Barrett for Duke, two lottery picks. They're 6'7", 6'8", one's 210, one's 215. I think Reddish is more the interior player. Barrett is more the wing guy. Could you pick him out of Could you pick him out of the Osmond family photo? Maybe.
No.
And last year, Marvin Bagley, who's now a Sacramento King, and Wendell Carter, who's now a Chicago Bull, were the two big guys for Duke.
Right, right. No, well, what happens is they actually do benefit off their likenesses because they come into the NBA with big sneaker contracts. It's going to be a huge one for Zion Williamson. That's going to happen. So they already are benefiting from it. But I wouldn't have a problem if, you know, they did a commercial for a local grocery store or yeah.
Like, I mean, Jameis Winston for Publix. Hi, yep. Jameis Winston for Publix. If you want the freshest crab legs, go to Publix.
Yeah.
They'll throw in free butter.
Okay. We had a story over the weekend that Zion Williamson's mother may have gotten some money to be a consultant for Nike.
It wasn't a story per se. It was Michael Avenatti going crazy on Twitter. And what I found interesting, Andy, is not many major media outlets picked up the baton and ran with it.
Yeah, because nobody cares. This is the point. Who cares? So what if she got some money? Is that going to change anything?
Well, who cares is a bad argument because people do care. If Duke is cheating in cahoots with Nike, if Nike is just as bad as Adidas, because Adidas ended up sending three or four guys to prison.
Yeah, that's a joke too. But because they didn't violate any federal laws, but they cheated in college.
Right. So if Nike is cheating and if they are as slimy as Adidas, which logic would say, well, of course they have to be as slimy as Adidas, then I think you should care if Nike is doing this in a way that's just more artful or more hidden.
But I suppose. But look, we've had Boeheim's been caught. He's had to give up wins. He still coaches,
I know.
No matter what happens, what if they catch Krzyzewski? Are they going to kick him out? Is he going to get fired at Duke?
No, but I guess it would tarnish his legacy.
So
in
what?
In theory,
yeah. But his legacy is so secure. Plus, he's crossed over. He's become this godlike figure for NBA guys because of the Olympics. So what?
When's he going to fucking retire? When's Boeheim going to retire?
They don't want to.
I know them. The money's too good. It's hard to displace them. And the search for coaching talent and the pressure to hire somebody good and keep them is so great. Look what just happened at Tennessee. Rick Barnes picks up the phone when UCLA calls and Tennessee says, whoa, 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 whoa. How about a new contract?
Yeah.
UCLA just got Coach Cal a new deal at Kentucky and got Rick Barnes a new deal at Tennessee. And Rick Barnes is a career come up shorter when it comes to coaching. Am I wrong about that?
Well, he's built good programs. I mean, Tennessee was not really after the cheating of Bruce Pearl there, they kind of bottomed out for a while. And so he came in and cleaned it up. And now, the UCLA, you're maybe a little bit too young, but to me, UCLA is the Yankees of college basketball. I know it's been a long time, and I know that they won one in the last, 30 years or whatever it was, 40 years. But I still think that if you can turn that around, it really matters. And Tennessee is a football school. It is. UCLA, when they're good, it's a basketball school.
Andy, UCLA is an old Broadway actress who is now 72 and trying to dine out on her good looks. She is long since over. I believe the blue blood Mount Rushmore of the college game is Kansas, home of Fog Allen and Dr. Naismith, Kentucky, yeah. Duke, and North Carolina.
Yeah, see, Duke to me is still new money.
It is new money. You're right. It is .com money. But guess what? They are the new standard. You know what they're like? They're like Apple. Apple's a relatively new company.
See, here's what UCLA is to me. I went to my 40th reunion a couple of years ago, and the really great-looking girls from high school, although they may have gotten a little older, a little fatter,
still look great. Whatever,
to me, I still look at them as the same way I did in 1975. So that's UCLA to me, and it always will be.
And yet, UCLA was dominant because the college landscape was so far different in terms of exposure, television. And on top of that, UCLA cheated.
Oh, of course. Yeah. But that's the grease that's moved the wheels forever in college basketball. Yeah. That's nothing new. That goes back to the 1950s at NYU.
Well, here's what's got to be embarrassing for UCLA. First and foremost, they don't fly charters. Did you know that?
Oh, and they don't pay their coaches all that well either.
Right. They fired Steve Alford on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
And they still can't hire somebody. Somebody joked on Twitter, has UCLA considered posting this job on monster.com? Somebody else tweeted, at this rate, they're going to have to offer the gig to LeVar Ball in exchange for buying out big baller brand sneakers.
Yeah.
Oh, Why not? That is cold. That is cold. Hey, let me go back to what you said. Andy got into it with John Feinstein. Mr. Season on the Brink, Mr. BB&T Classic, a guy who has been super involved in the college game for years, is very close friends with Gary Williams. John did not like the semifinals when they had four student athletes from all four schools combine on a little a cappella quartet with a guy playing guitar, couple mm-hmm. of the singing. It was like volleyball, soccer, water. It was like four different non-revenue sports, and it had the perfect diversity representation. Guy, girl, Asian, black guy. Perfect, right? I thought it was nice. You thought it was nice. And here comes Feinstein on Twitter just throwing haymakers.
Yeah.
Calling the NCAA hypocritical, and I hate hypocrites, and he's going back and forth with people who are like, geez, John, who pissed in your Cheerios today?
Yeah, and I simply said, well, I liked it. He says, I wasn't criticizing the singing, Andy.
But I don't understand. Like, he took umbrage with the NCAA calling them student athletes, when in fact, I thought they were the very definition of student athletes because they're non-revenue students.
Yeah, I felt that way too, but maybe he thought that they were using those student athletes to say, oh, they're just like the basketball players we're about to watch.
Oh.
And that was their point. But, you know, Feinstein has had some pretty serious run-ins. He almost got in a fist fight with Brent Musburger a long time ago.
Because
he thought that Musburger was too much of a shill for the NCAA.
Well, then I don't think Feinstein would have liked this TV crew. Let's talk about the announcers.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
I was just going to say to you, if I hear Grant Hill say, that's not an easy shot, one more time, I'm going to smash this beautiful 65-inch TV that I bought a few months ago. Every shot, that's not an easy shot. Well, of course it's not an easy shot. They're trying to contest it.
I said something on Twitter that got some people triggered. I said, look, enough of the Onions, the Kiss, Jerome, organize those puppies man to man, and all the growling. I said, I've had enough. And that's rare for me because I like Raftery. I love Raftery. I've loved him. He's been one of my favorite TV uncles for a long time. But I swear there were times during the broadcast I didn't understand what Raftery was growling.
Yeah.
It was almost like he was ordering off a Chinese takeout menu.
I think maybe he's looked at all the books that Vital's written and all the pizza commercials he does.
And he's thinking, hey, this is the way to go. Every game he has done this tournament, he gets in every one of his five phrases.
Yeah.
Jerome, onions, kiss, organize them puppies, man to man. Everyone, Andy.
Well, I think it's also intoxicating for him when he walks through airports and people yell those things back at him. And so it feels like, ooh, it works. You know, look, they recognize me.
True or false, I once stood next to Raftery at the old US Air Arena, before it was called US Air Arena, Cap Center, at a urinal taking a piss during a timeout in a Georgetown basketball game, and had a brief exchange with him in which he was very pleasant. True or false?
I would say that's extremely true.
Ding, ding, ding. I was 22 years old, and he was, you know, even though he didn't need some young punk talking to him while he was pissing, I figured, hey, it's Bill Raftery. I want to say something like, hey, Raft, how's it going?
Did you have a press pass for that?
No, he went into one of the public restrooms, I believe.
Oh, really?
No. You know what? No. I was an intern. I was an intern in the Susan O'Malley Le Boulay of circa 1988. I want to say I was in college at the time. So there it was, which brings me, while we're talking about Le Boulay, to the Wizards, Andy. Ernie Grunfeld has finally met the Turk.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, Ted has to say, well, you know, I had a clean slate when he came in and all that. That's fine. But reality was, you know, it was time for him to go some time ago. And I like Ernie a lot. And I think that initially he did a great job. I mean, when he took over after Jordan was thrown out, he did a great job. But 16 years, you know, you can say new ownership and you're not going to pay any attention to what happened under Abe Pollin, but that really isn't a really good way to look at things. And the fact that he was allowed to, you know, rebuild after Gilbert, and he made, okay, you know, he made some picks that were, one Wall was obvious, and then I think Beal at the number three was a good pick, but he's made some terrible draft picks and would fix them with some pretty good trades from time to time. His free agent moves became terrible because the team was bad and nobody wanted to come here. So all in all, it was a tenure that went about, I would say, about 7 or 8 years too long in reality.
But didn't his 16-year tenure pretty much split 50-50 between your cousin Abe as well as Ted? So if Ted comes in and says, well, okay, clean slate, I'm going to see how I work with this guy. He gave him 8 years. And there was playoffs in 4 of those 8 years, I think.
Yeah, but that's the problem. It was almost like the Redskins way, where they go, "Oh, we're you know, first round playoff team. We're close." No, you're not really close. And they were never able to get that great player to come here. And then, you know, when the summer of 16, where they had to spend money, and he had to give Jan Mahimi $62 million. He gave Andre Blotch a second contract when you could tell he was a turd. I mean, things like that, you just look back and you say, what was he thinking at the time? And it was just this desperate attempt to stay good, but not do what it takes to get great.
And boy, do I see that dynamic playing out with the Washington Redskins right now and Jay Gruden. It looks like this Rosen thing is going to happen, or it may have already been agreed to, and an interesting theory I saw today was that the league has told the Cardinals and the Redskins, hey, don't spoiler alert our reality show known as The Draft by announcing this deal now. Would you buy that?
How does that spoil the draft? I don't understand.
Because then if they say we've traded Josh Rosen to the Redskins for a second and a third or whatever the number is, then we know who's going number one, number one.
Oh, yeah, I guess. I mean, theoretically, the Cardinals could sign Murray now. That's happened. You can sign a guy before the draft.
That's right. Didn't Charlie do that with the Texans with Jadeveon Clowney?
I think. And then there was the one where.
Or no, not Clowney. He did it with the guy that went to the Bills. The defensive
Mario Williams.
Mario Williams. Yep.
Yeah. Well, also, I think the reason that either it was it may have been Cleveland and Tim Couch became their quarterback is because they couldn't sign Achilles Smith. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, so I don't know about that. I just think
I don't want Rosen. I don't think he's going to be very good. And I think the fact that nobody else is clamoring with us to go get him says all you need to know. The Cardinals may be idiots. They may be selling a used car after just having driven it off the lot for pennies on the dollar. I don't think they're idiots. I don't think, like, bottom line with Rosen is this, Andy. He ain't the guy. I'll know the guy when I see the guy. He ain't that guy. Sorry.
Doesn't seem to be, but, you know, you never know if he winds up in the right system. Of course, you know, anybody who winds up here, it's liable to be a disaster because it's here. You know, he could, you know, Bill Belichick could say, yeah, I'll spend a second rounder. We got a bunch of them back in storage here. Let's just pull one out and you know, let him sit behind Brady for 2 years. And then, you know, maybe he becomes Aaron Rodgers. Who knows?
There is talk the Skins might get him for a lone third. Could you imagine?
Do it. Yeah.
That'd be hard to pass up. And I'm not even for having him. Because then, see, the problem is he's marketable as, hey, this guy was a top 10 pick last year.
I know, but there's
still
really
under
nothing,
dealer warranty, no damage.
There's nothing they can do that will increase or make it a better atmosphere this season than it was last season. There's nothing they can do.
Draft Josh Rosen.
No.
Or trade for Rosen and then draft somebody sexy at 15. No.
The only thing you could do, this seriously,
this
the only
is a
thing
team that always sells sizzle, Andy. Always sells hope. Come on.
There's no more. The only sizzle they could sell is we've traded for Tom Brady. We're going to get 3 years out of him. That's it.
Jesus. Brady? Yeah. Brady, the Redskin years. I never considered that.
Look at the landscape here. I mean, they've taken something that was unbreakable and they've broken it, and now you got a hockey team. The excitement now for the Caps heading into the playoffs is spectacular. People are really juiced up about that.
Yep.
The baseball team's bullpen is a mess.
Yeah.
That's a problem, but they'll get that fixed. I mean those two spring sports that bleed into the fall with the Nationals, the Redskins are really dropped. It's unbelievable to me that this has happened, but they are really in danger of falling to like third in this town. It's incredible.
It is pretty incredible. By the way, what was I going to say? I lost my train of thought here. So Redskins draft Rosen, third rounder, blah, blah, blah. Oh, bad contracts. We were talking about Ernie and bad contracts. Do you in any way feel bad for Crash Davis of the Baltimore Orioles, who on Monday night went 0-for-3 to extend his hitless streak to 0-for-49 dating back to last year? He is due $22 million, $22 million, and $22 million after this year's $22 million is all deposited into the bank. He has gone to a guy who literally can't hit the ball.
I know. It's amazing. We've seen this with pitchers over the years. Steve Blass, the most famous, who suddenly couldn't find the plate. But I can't remember a hitter who just dropped off the table. Now, he was never a great average hitter. Even when he hit his 47 home runs, I think he hit like 235 for that year.
Yeah.
But the fact that he cannot hit the ball is hard to imagine. Now, maybe it's eyesight. Could be. You know, maybe he needs LASIK surgery. I don't know.
Maybe a hypnotist. Help me. I need a hypnotist.
But I don't blame the Orioles for investing the money they did. he seemed like, and he was a young player, good player, and hit a lot of home runs, but I never seen anything like this on a hitter.
In 2013, Andy, when he was 27, his age 27 season, as Galdi would say, he hit 53 home runs, drove in 138 with a batting average of 286.
Oh, was that high? Okay, yeah.
Those are Hall of Fame-shaped numbers, at least for 1 year. Right. Slumped to 26 in 2014, bounced back to 47 in 2015. However, that was the year he got busted for taking Adderall and got suspended for 25 games at the end of the regular season. Then the Orioles, deep in the winter of 2016, because I'm on Baseball Reference and I'm looking it up, it wasn't until like January they signed him to that deal. 6-year deal for 120 whatever million dollars. Actually, more than 6 years. 1, 2, 3. 7-year deal. 7-year deal. And he's trying. And they don't know what to do with him. They shut him down early last summer so he wouldn't be more embarrassed.
Yeah, it's really baffling, and I don't even know what to do. I mean, if you're the Orioles, what do you do? Do you cut your losses? Cut them loose? Do you send them down to the minors? How do you do it?
I would go to him and say, "What, Chris Crash? What do you want to do? Do you want to keep going out there and swinging and missing? Because by the way, the Orioles are in tank mode." So he's actually helping them out by being as bad as he is.
Okay, that's true.
So you could ask him, you could say, look, are you immune to embarrassment at this point? If you hit 0-38 for the year, are you okay with that? Because we'll still send you out because, we're actually trying to lose. Or you might talk to him and you might say, look, this is hard for me to take. I don't want to be cut. I want to be around the team. The team wants me around. Give me a uniform. Just let me be in there. I'll pinch hit every now and then, okay? And if I'm the Orioles, I say, fine. If he comes to me and says, I can't take this anymore, I'd say, okay, we're going to cut you. We're going to cut you. We're going to eat the money.
You have to. Yeah, I mean, again, maybe something happens and he snaps out of it, but right now.
What? A magic spell? It's unthinkable.
Yeah, really, it really is. I mean, we're seeing with Trevor Rosenthal right now. He's that guy as a pitcher, but we haven't seen this as a hitter that I can remember.
Yeah, and then there's one more wrinkle that only matters to us here locally. That is apparently this Masson thing, this court case, Masson, the Mid-Atlantic Sports Network, which is the regional baseball network that carries both the Orioles and the Nationals. It's owned by Peter Angelos. And that was a concession to allowing the Nationals franchise to be born back in 05. He wanted to own the cable TV local regional rights. Okay, they did that, but the agreement was we'll pay an appropriate amount of rent to the Nats for being on our network. But the Nats and the Learners won't own any part of Masson. So right from the get-go, Angelos and the Learners are arguing about, you owe me this. No, I don't. Yada, yada, yada. Then there's some under-the-table payments. Then it goes to court. Then there's a decision in favor of the Nats. That just got overturned. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
And the Orioles now say they don't owe us anything.
Well, this is why Tom Lavero says he was told that they knew it was not a great deal from the beginning, but they didn't think Angelos would live this long.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Now, nobody's heard from Angelos in a while, so he may not be totally with it, but he's still alive. And that's part of what has gone on here. Now, the other thing that's happening is with all the cord cutting, the value of the deal is diminishing for the Orioles as well. There was a period when it peaked, you know, maybe 5-6 years ago, but that's changing now with all the cord cutting, and there's a possibility that the whole Masson network is going to dry out.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And Bud Selig tried to broker a deal to get Comcast to buy Masson. I think it was like $1 billion. And that didn't happen either. So, yeah, they just go back. And the learners, they like court. They're used to going to court. It's okay. They got a lot of lawyers on retainer. They're exactly. fine with that. Yeah.
And last ad on the hockey team. So I saw today where Lord Stanley, the cup itself, came back to D.C. with its handler because the playoffs are about to start. Caps open up on Thursday against Carolina.
Yep. Yeah.
And I likened it to in high school, you drop your girlfriend off at her parents' house after a date and you hope that everything is okay and cool because it's like, all right, you had your drunken fun with her. Time for her to come home and go to bed because technically you're still the champs, but we're holding the playoffs now and we'll see who wins this thing.
Yeah, I didn't know that was a fringe benefit. I remember when they opened the season and Ovechkin paraded around the ice with the cup. They put it in the box and it was going back to wherever it sits, the Hockey Hall of Fame or whatever. I didn't realize it comes back for the start of the playoffs. What if you don't make the playoffs?
I think you get it for almost a full year. I think. You know, you get the date ends once the playoffs begin.
Okay.
I think, but I don't know. Anyway, I would love to win it again, Andy. I don't know about you.
Oh, this is where now you start thinking about separating yourselves out as one of the great teams of all time. Not that many teams have ever won back-to-back. So, True. Yeah. And, you know, right now, I don't know anything about hockey, but I do know that Ovechkin is still playing great.
Yeah.
And remember last year heading into the playoffs, you remember who the goalie was? Philip Grubauer.
Yeah, that's right. Grubby.
So now you got Braden Holtby who's playing well. I mean, he's not great, but he's been good. And the team, you know, they had this hiccup around the first of the year where they lost like 7 straight. And you were thinking, oh my God. And they righted the ship on that and they've been playing really well. So, I don't think it's unthinkable to think they could win another one.
I don't so much give a shit as to their legacy and where they stand in the pantheon of all-time great teams that win back-to-back. I want them to win the cup again because it's goddamn fun.
Oh,
it's
God.
It's a goddamn thrill ride fun all the way through to June. I say let's do it again.
But the odd thing about the way we rank everything now, that if they did win the cup, we would start comparing the celebration to last year. Well, it wasn't quite as great. Ovechkin didn't do as many kid stands. They didn't take it. There were a few less people at the parade. You know?
If they win it again, one of the players will have to die celebrating to top last summer. And I don't want that to happen, but I'm just saying that's what it would take to top it. All right, Andy, enjoy the Masters on Sunday. I hope Mr. Redshirt is in the lead or somewhere on the first page come Sunday and you're enjoying your Chinese food before Murder, She Wrote in 60 Minutes.
Well, Murder, She Wrote isn't on anymore, but 60 Minutes is. And you want to talk about redemption, you know, with what Virginia just did? That would instantly be topped by Tiger winning the Masters.
Yeah.
Instantly.
Some people think Tiger doesn't have a shot. I know Hank Haney was running him down on his radio show because his putting's been bad this year. I'm saying no. Tiger will be a factor in this thing. I believe it in my bones, and I believe Phil cannot be ruled out either. The old guys at Augusta with all the local knowledge, they will be a factor when it's all said and done. Andy,
Tiger's what, 43? Is he 43?
Yeah.
42? Okay, Jack was 46. So yeah.
He's got a couple years on me. A
couple years left, yeah.
Old man, still got it done. Don't forget about it, Andy. I talked to you out of Creighton Farms. You know that.
Yes, sir. That was great.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you next week. Thanks, pal.
See ya.
A lot of chatter from people on the internet, you know, where people chatter and argue with each other about the late start time for tonight's championship game or last night's championship game. 9:20 in the East. Not good. Not great, Bob, as the line goes in Mad Men. And then there was the usual sniping back and forth from some people, like Doug Gottlieb of Fox Sports to Clay Travis, who also is on Fox Sports. Travis was complaining about the 9:20 start time. Gottlieb was explaining, but this is how you get the best ratings. other people chimed in. There was a blog post on For the Win or Awful Announcing that said, people need to stop complaining about the late start time. I don't quite know exactly how they're trying to aim this particular sporting event. Obviously, everyone, you know, you get the peak tune in if it's a close game late. And the game would have gotten close, or I don't know, it's halftime right now. So I don't know if it's going to be close or not, but it would, games would get close in the 11 o'clock East Coast hour, which of course translates to 8 p.m. out west, which means you get theoretically the best of both worlds. But is that just they want, do they just want the peak viewership, or do they want all viewers over the entire run of the game itself? To me, 8 o'clock would have been a much nicer start time. 8 o'clock, so you get 2.5 hours or thereabouts with a long halftime and extra long timeouts. And then you get a half an hour post game, one shining moment, coaches' interviews, locker room, yada, yada. You're out by 11 on the East. And for the West Coast people, you say game starts at 5. You chose to live out West, not us. So deal with it. That's how I would go. But as you know, there are major corporations sponsoring this event, and there is a lot of rights fees at stake. So therefore, they're going to start it when they're going to start it. It's the latest big event starting time, East Coast time, that exists in sports. And not good if you have to wake up the next morning early and go earn a living. Sometimes you read news stories and details, and then you have to go reread them because you just can't believe. Wait, you're like, wait, what? This story about the Chinese woman who was arrested at Mar-a-Lago trying to who knows what at a Trump family-related supposed charity get-together gets even stranger by the report. According to Secret Service agents, when they searched her room at the Colony Hotel, they discovered she had $7,000 in change in U.S. currency and a bit more in Chinese money after she had told the authorities she only had $5,000 in a Wells Fargo bank account. Oops. Agents also found a cell phone, 9 USB drives, 5 SIM cards, plus a device that can be used to spot hidden cameras. Those electronic devices were in addition to 4 cell phones, a laptop, a thumb drive that agents found in her purse when she was arrested. An examination of the thumb drive showed it contained malicious software that was unusual and potentially damaging. This according to Secret Service agent Samuel Ivanovich. When another agent tried to examine it, the malware began immediately installing a file on the agent's computer. I hope this computer was just a dummy computer that the Secret Service uses that has no internet access, is not connected to anybody or anything, and is just used to just sort of sniff out, hey, does this thumb drive have malware on it? The spyware begins doing its thing and unloading and installing. And when another agent tried to examine it, the malware, began installing itself. He said it never happened to him. It was very out of the ordinary, said the Secret Service agent Ivanovich. He had to immediately stop the analysis and shut down his computer to halt any further corruption. Lou, plug this into your computer. See what happens. Then, when they took this woman to interview her at the Secret Service office in West Palm Beach, they talked to her for 4.5 hours. They don't have any audio of the interview. Apparently, the room at the Secret Service office in West Palm Beach is not wired to capture audio. It only records video. Why would you wire it that way? Are we not the Secret Service? Even better, according to the story, The new Secret Service officer had not worked before at the West Palm Beach office, so after 4.5 hours of interviewing this Chinese national who got a thumb drive with malware and had a bunch of other electronics and cameras that can detect hidden cameras into an event that could have had the president and or his family in it at the event. After all this, the agent interviewing this woman for 4.5 hours didn't know that the interview was not being recorded on audio tape. I didn't know this room didn't record audio. I thought it had pictures and audio. Jesus. Good job. Good job. Good effort. I know there's a lot of hardworking men and women, very competent men and women in the Secret Service and in other parts of government, but that is a forehead slapper right there. Oh, and now they're debating and they're arguing whether or not this woman should be given bail. And they're trying to determine whether or not she's a flight risk. Yes! Yes, she's a flight risk. No, she shouldn't get bail. I don't care. Oh, she's just a poor, confused Japanese woman or Chinese woman who thought she was going to a fundraiser and her English is not very good and these agents took advantage of her. No. You're not going anywhere till we figure out a little bit more about who sent you here, who gave you this money, who told you to come here, where'd you get that thumb drive, and what's with this thing that detects hidden cameras? Who the hell are you exactly? Then there's this former Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid, lost his civil court case against TheraBand, a company that makes exercise and rehabilitation bands that Reid claims left him seriously injured due to a manufacturing defect. This was back in 2015. The problem is, and one of the reasons he lost his case, was his story was all over the place. First, Reid testified that his injuries were the main factor why he decided not to seek a sixth Senate term in 2016. However, lawyers for TheraBand showed the jury a 2015 video in which Reid said his decision not to run had, quote, absolutely nothing to do with my injury. Oops. Also, he had shifting explanations on just how he was injured. Reid told various sources that, well, I had it hooked to a wall inside my bathroom, and then he said I had it hooked around a handle on my shower door. Then he said the band broke. Then he said a lot of different things. But get this, one of the biggest problems with Reid's testimony was not just his shifting stories, it was the fact he couldn't even prove the band he was using that day was manufactured by the people he had sued. That's because his son threw the band away after the accident. Are you kidding me? Shouldn't our legal system just say, where's the band? We threw it away. And you're suing TheraBand. Yes. Why? Well, they're the ones that made it. Well, you can't even prove it. You don't even have the band. Apparently what failed was Harry Reid's grip. And not just his grip on the band, but also his grip on the truth. Physical therapists had testified they were working with Reid for months to get him to use a proper stance when using the band. Also, he should have never been exercising in a bathroom full of hard surfaces where apparently he slipped, lost his grip, and then spun around and smashed his face on the hard edge of his bathroom counter. But it still went to trial. Lawyers got paid, and a jury actually had to sit there and listen to that and shake their heads. Let's end on this today. I don't know if this is true or not, but I didn't really want to challenge Mrs. C until I did some research or got some feedback. So we were moving cars around the driveway in various garage spots, and I pulled the pickup truck, the Ford F-150, out onto the grass out here at the Zabin compound, the monogamous compound, as I call it. And as the day was winding down, my wife says to me, and by the way, honey, don't forget to move the truck off the grass and back onto the driveway. And I jump in and I said, so it doesn't kill the grass? And she goes, no, so the tires don't deflate. And I'm like, really? Aurora Borealis localized in your kitchen? No, I said, oh, what do you mean? She goes, well, it happened before when I had my car parked on the grass. The soft ground caused the tires to deflate. Well, I'm going to keep an open mind about this. Maybe my wife's been getting Scientific American magazine or Popular Mechanics or something or Driveway Weekly. And I don't know. Is she right? Does your car being on soft ground somehow induce tires to lose air? Could it be the moisture on the grass instead of the hard ground? Does it have something to do with the force? I don't know. And I'll just say this right now. If you're going to tell me that she is completely full of shit and totally off base, I'm going to have you tell her that. And not in those words, obviously. I'll have you gently break it to her that, no, that has nothing to do with nothing regarding your tires, but nice try. I don't want to say that. Just, you know, don't need to have the sideways looks. Of course, I might be the dummy. I might be the one that never knew this. So do let me know, all you Bill Nye science guys out there, and I'll share with you what I get. That'll do it for today. Thank you. Download, subscribe, comment, and like. Do tell a couple friends. People ask all the time, I love the Zabecast. How do I help out? Just tell somebody. Tell somebody, look, there's a sports radio guy who doesn't suck, who doesn't traffic in the same old bullshit arguments. He's funny. He's provocative. He's kind of an asshole at times, but he's got a heart of gold, and he'll win you over. And you can listen to him every day, 5 days a week, four for free. One that costs money. Sign up and subscribe to the premium. Zabe.com/premium. Fridays ain't free. You know that. Podcasts of the future. They're like Netflix for your ears. Thank you for yours. Have yourselves a great night. I'm going to bed. It's late out there. And we will see you next time.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.